Nervous this morning, and there's we're on this very tight time schedule, as you've probably picked up. So I've written what I've got to say, and I'm going to stick to it. But I want to say first, this is a I have no theological training, and this is my own personal journey as a layman. And I'm wondering now whether I should have perhaps put it to someone personally. One-to-one before I blurt it out to the public arena. So anyway, here goes. I felt a bit nervous right at the beginning too when I saw Phil's definitions of certainty, because I've used that word a fair bit through here, and it's maybe that wasn't the right choice of word. Anyway, here goes. I grew up in a strong Christian environment, and my faith was shaped by my parents and the conservative evangelical churches I attended. I've gone to Baptist churches through my life. From my teen years, I experienced a strong and personal relationship with God. A life for me pretty much revolved around my devotion to God and being in activities where I felt that I could do something for Him. I was very comfortable with life, with my life and my faith. And I look back and have got good memories of those years. So this more recent time of uncertainty was not about the actual existence of God, nor did it initiate from a place of discontent with my Christian faith. On September 11, 2001, an historic event took place. At the time, I was working for Coorong, and it didn't take long before I started to notice the responses from well-known and respected Christian authors, you know, to the event. One particular author's response shocked me. R.C. Sproul, and a lot of you know of him, said, and I quote, "If someone would say to me, why did this event happen? What was God's purpose in all of this? The only honest answer I could give would be simply, I don't know. I can't read God's mind. If you were to ask me, was God involved, my answer, of course, would be yes. Because I'm committed to the Christian doctrine of providence, I'm convinced that God was involved in this act, that it was according to God's purpose. But what His specific purpose was for this event, I do not know. If I am asked, did God ordain the calamity in New York City? I say, yes, He did." R.C. Sproul said that because of his commitment to the doctrine of providence, God had to have ordained this act of terror. It seemed back to front to me that the character and actions of God were determined by a man-made belief system. So I became quite motivated to understand or unravel what to me was an embarrassing and insulting belief about God. And I knew at the time that this was going to change me, or it was going to be the start of a journey of just trying to work this out. Anyway, after a year or so of research and pondering and trying to fathom the thinking of a 16th century theologian, and particularly John Calvin, I come to realise that his beliefs were influenced by an erroneous worldview, and that living in an age of ignorance, he formulated a belief system that determined God's place in creation without understanding scientifically how the universe worked. Now, do you see what I mean about what I said, what I did at the beginning? All right, that's John Calvin. Anyway, this discovery initiated the doubt that I started having about my set of beliefs. If this fundamental belief system was wrong, and it seemed to be the basis from which I've been taught over my years of attending church, what else might be? So I started looking at some of my big beliefs. For the first time, I needed to know why I believed what I did, but at the same time felt strongly that if I was going to hold to a Christian faith, if I was going to say my faith was a Christian faith, then my searching and answers had to have a biblical basis. Now, I'm not sure sort of what order I pursued these, but here's some examples from that journey where I thought and made decisions along the way. So I thought long and hard about the ancients' decision to use the same word, or same Hebrew word, ruah, for three seemingly different events: the invisible force of God, or God's spirit, wind and breath. Without an understanding of the presence of air or oxygen or atmosphere, these three things would have been invisible, mysterious forces. The moving in and out of our bodies of this invisible force, ruah, meant life. When someone dies, ruah, or breath, leaves them. And Bible translators, though, have commonly substituted ruah as spirit, a word denoting eternal existence. So I rethought what I believed about the immortality of man. And if we are only mortal, what happens after death? I discovered that the Hebrew word that is translated hell, which is Sheol, isn't considered in the Old Testament texts as a place of punishment or eternal torment. And every Bible dictionary that I referred to said it was a resting place of both the righteous and the unrighteous. And I think at the time at Coorong, I went through every dictionary on the shelf to check. And one commentator even said, and this is one of the older commentators, either Unger's Bible Handbook or Haley's Bible Handbook. So one of these old commentators said, it is regrettable that Sheol has been translated hell. In Psalm 139, it says that God is in Sheol. And I read that the Jews didn't hold to the traditional Christian understanding of hell. So that was another one that I sort of had to rethink and change my mind on as I went along. So if there's no hell, what are we saved from? I often refer to the Strong's Concordance for meanings and comparison of text. So from the Strong's Concordance again, the Greek word saved, as used in the New Testament, has connotations of being put in a safe place, kept, preserved, or to make whole. There wasn't the obvious reference of the traditional view of being rescued, from hell. It seemed to me that God is saving people, and it's not a rescue mission, but a preserving mission, that God is preserving us for a purpose. Now, Claire says something like this: if you're not listening to the whole sermon, if you're just taking little bits home with you, then think and meditate on this. Am I one of God's preserved people? Am I one of God's pickled people? So, what are we saved for? In 1 Corinthians 15, the New Testament writer Paul talks about a day when we are born again, born spiritually, the day when we are changed from mortal beings to spiritual beings. And I think Jesus' resurrection points to this, and Claire touched on the concept of the resurrection day or the rapture a couple of Sundays back. So this is what I think we're being saved for. There's this event coming up. So that's some of them. In time, I started collecting a set of statements I felt I could be certain about that I believe came from a reasonable interpretation of Bible texts and the concepts there. And for the first time, I felt confident talking about my faith. I found I was able to relate to non-Christians more comfortably and spontaneously. What I believe now doesn't seem contradictory, condemning, fearful, weird, or offensive. And to this point, I'm thankful for this journey. Thankful that God has seen over it, has put his energy into it, or maybe even prompted along the way. And maybe in the future these certainties, or whatever they are, I hold will come under review, and after today anything could happen. There are some more things though that I'd like to think about, and prayer is one of these. I'm thankful for our home group, where we are accepted despite the changing certainties and uncertainties that we come with. And I'm thankful too for this community, for the understanding it has that we're all on our own journey, and each of us have our own collection of certainties and uncertainties that we hold. Thank you.